go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 103 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. You are doing it all wrong. You are all living life incorrectly. That is right. The B-Man is calling you all out. And, I spend a lot of time scrolling scrupulously through Reddit, trying to find posts to talk about here on this project that I call Verbal Graffiti. And a lot of those posts that I end up pulling pertain to relationships, which is a topic that I find fascinating because I am a failure at relationships. I don't really know how to get into them. And the very, very few that I've been into, I've been destroyed when I get out of them. So I see so many people out in the wild, in the world, get in and out of them, easy peasy. It's almost unicorn-like to me. It's like, how do you do that? How do you meet somebody, go out, and then, like, hey, we hold hands in public? That's perplexing to me. But a lot of these posts that I read on Reddit, the same backstory. And in real life as well, same backstory. A lot of friends that I know have this story. So, well, we dated for 10 years. Then we got married. Then we had kids 2 years after being married. So we've been together 15 years, and we have two children under the age of four, and then we decide to get a divorce. Or maybe the marriage stuck together if we're being more positive, which we're trying to be here at Verbal Graffiti. So you've been together 15 years, got married after 10, started having kids after 12 years together, and me, the B-Man, as an observer of your relationship, reading the cliff notes of your relationship, of your now marriage and burgeoning family, I'm here to tell you, you did it all wrong. What took you so long to get married? Who needs to be together 10 years and then decide, yeah, let's get married. Let's put it on a piece of paper, put our bank accounts together, put the deed of our house, put both our names on it. Like, what took so long? Now, if you were together 10 years, that is a decade. You got, that is decade. That's 10 years. And then you decided, like, the marriage didn't change anything in your relationship. Right? If you were together 10 years, there was no need to get married. You should be getting married within 3 years of meeting your partner, your lover. It's 3 years max. If you're not popping out babies, God willing, if you're able to, if you're able to push one out of your vagina, 3 years max. If you're together 3 years and you have yet to impregnate your lover, you're doing it wrong. You're wasting your time. You're wasting your child's time if you happen to have one. You're wasting, most importantly, your future lover's time because you should have dumped that loser of a guy you were with or that babe that you were with after year three, instead of figuring out after year 12 that you should have ended the relationships 9 years prior. That is such a waste of time. The fact that the average babe in this country is waiting till like 30 plus years to start having children. You should start having children in your early 20s. That way you can enjoy your grandkids when you're in your 50s and 60s and you're still young and spry enough to help out with the grandkids so you don't have to send the kids to daycare where you don't spend any time with your kids. You know, they go straight from daycare to kindergarten to first, to, you know, through K through 12. So they leave the house and you realize they spend more time with teachers and counselors than they did with the loving parents that you and your lover are. Here in America, we are doing it all wrong. Like, seriously, I am not being hyperbolic when I say this. I do stand-up. You all know this. Even though I am a failure at stand-up comedy, I'm actually pretty good on stage. And by I can do a 20-minute set, and I do a lot of crowd work. By the time I get on stage and introduce myself and go, hey, I'm the B-man. I am here for the next, you know, 10 to 50 minutes, and we're going to have a good time until I say, go suck a fat one and walk off stage. When I say go suck a fat one and I walk off stage, I can, to a man in that audience, I could tell you, everyone, I could tell you which person is merits material and which person is not. And I go, each person in the audience, because usually I will talk to everybody in the audience, and I know within the hour, who is marriage material and who is not. Now, I'm not saying those people will find the right person to marry, but there's a certain personality types that are fun to hang around with, and there are others that are wet blankets, and it's not, you don't need 10 years to figure it out. Honestly, I use, within 15 minutes of meeting somebody, I could tell whether, oh yeah, I'd marry her, or nope, I want nothing to do with her. Now, sometimes her boobs will make it a little, you know, I was like, hey, I'll hang around a little bit longer than 15 minutes if she has a wet blanket personality, but she has boobs that I want to jiggle a bit and you know, play with. But other than that, most people could figure out within an hour. Yeah, like, let's do life together, or let's move it along. 10 years, way too long. I'll give you an example. Last night, we were doing stand-up, handful of us. Afterwards, we're at the bar. I didn't want to drink. I did not want to drink. It was a Tuesday night. But the bartender, Emery, she's a good salesperson, good bartender. She convinced me to have a Guinness beer, you know, because everyone else in the group had a Guinness. So I was peer pressured. I didn't want to be different. So I had the Guinness. And I had the Guinness. We're talking about comedy. There's two ladies, babes, to the right of us. And they overheard us. And like, oh, you guys do stand up. We start talking. Just talking. That's all it was. And I thought one of those babes was marriage material. The other was not. Let's talk about the one who was marriage material. Now, this girl was very engaging. She was keeping eye contact with all of us, talking about comedy. Or, you know, I asked her, so who are some comics that you like? And her answers were Whitney Cummings and Matt Rife. So right away, the B-man is like, well, nope, our personalities are not going to jive. Like, you have a very good personality, but If Whitney Cummings is your favorite comedian, you're not going to like my person. You're not going to like my sense of humor. I'm not going to like your sense of humor. So when we're in a car together, we're going to argue over what comedy to listen to. So no bueno between the two of us. But she had a very pleasant personality. Whoever she ends up marrying, that guy's going to be happy. The two of them are going to be happy together. The other babe that we were talking to barely made eye contact with us. She was just looking at her phone most of the time. She'd raise her head every now and then and give an answer that was a few words. I noticed on her screen of her phone was a photo of a baby, an infant, less than 3 years old, I'm assuming her child. So her baby daddy probably left her because she was a Debbie Downer, was non-outgoing personality. Now, that lady, very attractive. She'll trap another guy, and that guy will be miserable. Hopefully, his brother has a family member who is a lawyer, because he is going to need a divorce lawyer, because that lady is going to wreck his life. Very attractive, but I knew within a half hour of that conversation with our group and their group that lady, do not marry her. And I do that on stage. I could tell you. It's a superpower I have. I can tell you, yep, that guy, he's fun. Like, you want to go do lovey things with him, that babe, nope, stay away from her. Yeah, she's hot, but she's not toxic, but also just not lifelong loving material. So, yeah, you're doing it all wrong. So if you're listening now and your boy toy, You've been with them 7+ years, no children. You've wasted the last decade of your life. And you're not alone, because this is how most Americans are. Most people are over the age of 30 without children, and they're fucking up their future kids and their future grandkids because of their greediness. And this American culture that's told us you need to go to college, have your career, and then have children. I know we're doing it backwards. You should have your children, then go to college and work on your career. Because when you're 19 years old, nobody knows what the fuck they want to do with their life. I'm 40. I still don't know what I want to do with my life. Thankfully, though, I do not have any kids. All right. All right. Off my soapbox. Let's move it along. All right. Found this from the subreddit. Deciding to be better. Good for you. How to fully accept that I am not. Sorry. How to fully accept that I am just not and will never be conventionally attractive and spend my effort on improving other aspects of my life instead. Seeking advice. Context. I am a male in my 30s, 5'7", 250 pounds. I am a short, stocky, fat with broad shoulders and thick, short legs. I can't wear skinny jeans. I can't wear slim fit shirts. Even if I do lose the fat, I'll look like a manlet, so I don't even bother trying. I'm so envious of tall, lean guys over 6 feet tall with flaunting slim suits and just get overflooded by envy. I feel like if I just accept that I will never be an attractive person, I can just focus on spending my effort elsewhere, like my fitness, building skills, friendships, etc. But my brain just reminds me every 10 minutes that I am a short, fat, ugly, undesirable piece of shit, and it's so excruciatingly painful. Does anyone else have an answer or something remotely close? Because I've been searching for it for over 6 years, including therapy, and still haven't found an answer. Well, thankfully for you, we live in an age currently where slim fit clothing is out of style. If you've been out in public, you'll notice all the babes are wearing the mother jeans, high up, thick, that thick, terrible denim, and guys are wearing loose fitting clothing. That is the in style. So actually, you not being able to wear, you know, slim fit shirts and jeans and suits. You really don't have anything to worry about there, because God forbid you wear form-fitting jeans like I do, all the fashion experts on X will scathe you and they'll make you feel so miserable about the clothing that you wear that you'll go to Amazon and start searching how much a noose will cost, because it'll make you want to off yourself. But I like jeans that are form-fitting, because I don't like jeans that sag down. That's why I like tighter jeans. And I'm a tall, skinny guy, so I think they look better on me than all that baggy clothing. I like to show off my bulge. Anyway, this is not about me. This is about you. So fashion-wise, you are actually in a good spot being a short, stocky, fat piece of shit that you are. You know, it seems like you're doing everything you can do to make yourself a more appealing, not piece of shit person. You told me you're working on your friendships, you're building your craft, you're trying to find hobbies. I don't know if you know, you've taken the red pill without even knowing that somebody gave you the pill, because that is what the red pill is. It's just work on, like, fuck the babes for a couple years and work on yourself and making yourself more valuable. And you're doing that. You know, you're working on your fitness, you're lifting weights, you're finding hobbies. There are so many fat pieces of shit out there in America, guys. And I know, you know, I'm kind of one of them. You know, we waste our weekends drinking IPAs, getting fat and bloated, and wasting all our disposable income on parlays that will never hit. And all our money goes to FanDuel and DraftKings. And we waste our weekends watching college and NFL football. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like you're one of those. You're actually trying to make yourself an interesting, engaging person. So, a tip of my penis to you for doing that. But yeah, there's no way to fix 5'7". The babes like tall guys. They like the Chads. You gotta be over, what do they call it? Like 6'6"? The 5'6"s, like you have to be over 6 feet tall, make six figures, have over a 6-inch dick. There's a couple other sixes in there as well that I'm forgetting. But yeah, you're not those. So there's two solutions. One, you got to go under the knife. Do that surgery where they cut your ankles off or your shins and they put stilts in you and they make you like 8 inches taller. I've read up on this, and the surgery and the recovery from the heightening surgery is very painful and excruciating. But so also is being 5'7" and unlovable. So yeah, I say go under the knife and get that surgery. If you're really serious about feeling like a fat piece of shit that you are and you want to change it, get the whatever they call that surgery where you grow 8 inches. Or if you don't want to deal with that excruciating pain, there is a more extreme route that you can go. This is one I find more appealing because it can leave you with a much more lasting legacy. Let me explain. Spend a year reading biographies of all the great warriors we've had, right? Genghis Khan, Alexander the Great, Napoleon, Richard the Lionheart, you know, all those great leaders, George Washington. Spend a year reading, studying, taking notes on all the great warriors and leaders of human history. Then spend another year studying propaganda. I suggest reading, what's that book? How to Make Friends and Influence People. I don't know the author's name. And also, what's the other one? The Art of War by that Asian guy, Tzu Sun. I'm not really sure how to, Sun Tzu. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. I am illiterate and uncultured. So you all know that. Yeah, but spend a couple years reading up on military history, great leaders, and how to propaganda so you can propagandize people. Once you realize you've gotten all that skill, taken in all that information, it's time to start your revolution. And what I want you to do is you need to commandeer people who are 5'7" and under. Start recruiting them with your propaganda, all across the country, and then go international. Go to where all the short people are: Latin America, Ecuador, Colombia, Mexico. Where we all know the people are shorter than they are here in America. Just start infiltrating them and making them part of your brigade. Get all these people, and then it's time to go after the revolution. And what you gotta do is you go from high school to high school here in the United States of America, and you slaughter the varsity basketball team. You take all the guys in that team that are over 6 feet tall, you kill them, you stack them up, you burn them on the campus so everyone in the town sees it. Rinse and repeat. And once you've done all the high schools, you go to the universities. Again, you take all the varsity players that are over 6 feet tall on the basketball team and the volleyball team and the football team. You kill them. You put them on stakes for everybody to see. And the more people you kill, the more press you get, the more publicity you get, the more the short kings in the world will become enamored with what you're doing and will become a follower of you in this revolution that you are leading. And this is the revolution of the short kings. What you got to do is you just go out there and you kill and you slaughter and you maim every guy that is taller than 5'8" and is more attractive than you. And it's surprising to me that no other short king has tried to do this. I guess Napoleon kind of tried to do this. But yeah, you just go kill everybody who has better natural genes than you. And once they're all killed off, that makes you the guy with the best genes in the world. You become the 0.0001% of the sexual market value. No longer are you a fat, short, stocky piece of shit. You are the short king and the lady everyone wants to be with and the guy everyone wants to have a beer with. You will have your pick of any lady you want. You could be friends with any guy you want, but you gotta lead that revolution. Now, I suspect you don't have it in you to lead this revolution because, again, to be an Alexander the Great or a Richard the Lionheart, that's the 0.00001% of human being is ever that person with that kind of mindset. So as a guy who's almost 6 feet tall, thankfully, you're not going to do that. So really, your only options are to actually just get that surgery, deal with the excruciating pain for the next 3 years. But you'll be walking tall and high after that. So yeah, you're short and stocky. But thankfully for you, you are a guy. You have two X chromosomes. And there are two types of fat, chubby guys. There are the jovial, fun ones that people enjoy being around. And there are the ones who are bitter and kind of hate life and the cards they were given. And you seem to be the latter. So for you, it's more of a mindset that you got to change because I don't think you're actually going to do the revolution or get that surgery. So you need to change your mindset. But again, you've gotten to therapy for the past 6 years and you think about this every 10 minutes. So I really don't have an answer for you, but you know, I did give you two options. So don't be hating on the B-man. You know, I did try to help you out. Let's go look at some photos. Now, it's been well documented here at Verbal Graffiti that I have a severe addiction to caffeine. More specifically, caffeine that comes in the form of coffee. Love it, love it, love it some more. Any of you that drink a decaf, turn your laptop off. Turn your headphones off. I don't want you listening to me. Get the fuck out of here. I don't want you as part of this project that is Verbal Graffiti. But this past week, I was trying to think. And I was really trying to formulate my addiction to coffee and really trying to discover, is this an addiction of mine or is this just something I really enjoy having? I was trying to talk about it on stage, so I really want to come to a consensus, and I fell on the ladder. I definitely have an addiction to coffee, but like, when did that come? Because for the longest time, I just enjoyed coffee. I could have it a couple times a week. I never really thought about it. I was like, oh, coffee. I'll have a cup of Joe, and then it slowly morphed into a craving. And I woke up, and all I could think about is that first cup of coffee, the brew, the pot, the smell in the kitchen of the brewing pot. It's just all of it. The aroma, walking into a cafe, seeing the lesbo baristas yelling out orders. It makes me chubby, you know, gives me a nice little chub. But I was really doing a mental exercise where I was brainstorming. What was that line of delineation where it went from enjoyment to addiction? And through some introspection, it hit me. It hit the B-man. I realized I have an addiction to coffee. This realization came when I would pee after drinking a cup of coffee and I would smell the coffee through my pee. When I enjoyed that smell, the smell of my pee post-coffee, that's when it hit me that, oh, I have an addiction to coffee. Like, I enjoy the smell of peeing after having a cup of coffee. That is a severe addiction. Now, I'm not so blown addict, my life is out of control, where I want to take that post-coffee pee scent and turn it into a scented candle. I'm not that much of an extremist, but I do. I do like that smell. Right? I don't know what I want to do with that smell, but you know what that does? Anytime I pee post coffee and I get the whiff of secondhand coffee for my pee, it does make me want to brew another cup of coffee. So that is a severe addiction. That's when you know you got it bad. Like they say with heroin addicts. Now, I've never done heroin. Maybe I will in the future, but as of this date, I have not, early 2025. I've heard that people who do heroin, their addiction is so strong that when they run out of money, that they will suck dick to get their fix. Well, with coffee, now I won't suck dick to have coffee, but I do believe smelling the pee from your dick post-coffee, that is sucking dick adjacent. Make of that what you will in my addiction to drinking coffee. All right, moving along. This one, what was this subreddit I found? Oh, this is a juicy one. Bowl psychology. Chatting to bowl and hot wife. Hi, Cuck here. I'm going to be driving my hot wife to stay overnight at her Bowls Hotel this week. Congratulations. I haven't been invited to join them on this occasion. I'll have to wait in the car while she meets him in the bar and gets comfortable. I've then been told that I'll be called when they are ready, and I will then have to collect the room keys from her bowl so that I can take my mistress's bags to his room. I might be invited to join them for a drink. Could you please give me any advice on how I should address them both? I guess a sir and miss would be most appropriate. And what I should say to her bowl. What do bowls enjoy hearing from cucks? Any other advice? Thanks. Well, now my mind... I read this post and immediately thought, well, this has got to be a shit post. And then I was doing some more research on the internet, as the B-Man does, surface level research. And now my mind is in one of those twisty, curly straws, because I don't know if this is real or not. This post is definitely internet finance bro humor at its finest, at its core. But it does seem there are a lot of guys who have this kink where they're a cuck and they want their wife to have sex with a bowl. And so I'm going to treat this as though it's a serious post and do so in a satirical manner, as I do with all of these, if you haven't picked up on that in 103 episodes. Sir and Miss is not the best way to introduce the way to speak to these two. Your hot wife, you should definitely refer to her as Your Majesty. And the bull that is coming into town this week, I refer to him as my lord. So my lord and her majesty, their royalty, you're a peasant cuck, treat them as such. Now, when you meet the bull for the first time, I'm going to suspect that this is probably going to be outside of the hotel. You probably have a very nice vehicle that the bull provides, because he is a bull and you're a cuck. So you probably drive an economic Honda or Civic or, you know, one of those economical cars, a Toyota Camry. But this guy's a bull. He's got a real vehicle. He's got a luxury vehicle, maybe a Land Rover. I don't know shit about cars. But anyway, when you open the door, first of all, don't make eye contact with either of them. You want to treat them like our not so glorious past here in America, if that's one way to put it. But like slavery, right? Like there was a time and age where slaves were not allowed black people, I guess this was probably post-slavery too, post-Reconstruction, where a black guy was walking and there was a white guy walking in the opposite direction and they were crossing each other. The black guy or woman was not allowed to make eye contact with the white person as they walked by. That is how you want to behave here with her majesty and your lord. You do not By the way, we are pro-abolitionists here at Verbal Graffiti. We are all for making eye contact with everybody, regardless of race, gender, ethnicity, creed. But in this instance, if you're a cuck, I do not want you making eye contact with your bull. So when that interaction is happening for the first time, head down, solemn, just a polite, nice to meet you, my lord. And do not extend your hand to shake the bull's hands. And the reason why is because the bull does not want to touch your hand. Because the bull's hands, his fingers, are going to be probing Her Majesty's, a.k.a. your hot wife's, body later that evening. Probably the insides of her sexy, hot, tight, lubricated vagina. So those two do not want your germs, those filthy germs of yours, those cuck germs, are ruining that probing action. So do not make any physical contact with the bull or eye contact. So just keep your head down. Nice to meet you, my lord. I will take you now to the bar, restaurant area. Now, when you go drive them to the bar, you be silent. I'm assuming they're in the back having a glorious time, having fun, engaging, playful, flirtatious conversation. Now, when you get to the bar, if you are in a fortuitous position where the royals invite you in to have a cocktail, kindly accept the request. Now, when you go in, you are not allowed to have any libations because you are a cuck and you don't deserve the feelings that libations can provide. So I advise you order a Diet Coke because, again, you're a cuck. You don't even deserve to have caffeine. And when you're at the table, don't make eye contact. Only speak when spoken to and give very short, few word answers. Yes, no, get straight to the point. Don't try to engage any further. Only speak when spoken to and do so quickly and in a short manner. And then after you have your Diet Coke, that's when you want to excuse yourself from the table. Again, don't make eye contact. You say, thank you, my lord, my majesty. I will go out now to the vehicle as you two enjoy your evening. And you go out to the car, right? The luxury car with a nice leather interior. And you just edge yourself. Just keep edging yourself, thinking about Her Majesty and my lord. Your lord and Her Majesty making great humping action together without you, because you're a cuck. You don't deserve your hot wife, Her Majesty. So just keep edging yourself, thinking about the bull being on top of Her Majesty, your hot wife. And just keep edging yourself until they come out. All right, once they go out, again, you open the door, let them in the back seat, and you drive them to the hotel. And on the way to the hotel, you want to speak under your breath. You want to make statements about how life is not fair and how you're jealous that all these hot, all these bulls come into town after dark and before dusk, and they get to have sex with all the hot wives, and how it's not fair that the cucks never get in on any of this action. Again, you're speaking to yourself under your breath, but loud enough so that the bull and Her Majesty behind you can hear what you're saying and what you're steaming about, and how you're angry and how you're frustrated. You want that to come through, but not like, don't do it too much where it becomes a nuisance and annoying. Just enough to let them know that you're a cuck, because that is what you are. You're a cuck. You are not a bull. And when you get to the hotel, again, you get out, you open the back door, and when they exit the vehicle, you turn to the bull and you say in a polite manner, you say something. What do you want to say? You say, "Hey, bull," "my lord, if you have a modicum of charity, as a cuck, I would enjoy it. It'd be my honor if you could leave the curtains open while you ravage Her Majesty. That way, you know, you could see Her Majesty being fucked in the hotel room while you're in a vehicle down below, being the little cuck beta that you are. And then the next morning, I got to imagine your hot wife, Her Majesty, is going to leave the hotel, come into to the vehicle, and I assume the bull will stay at the hotel and do whatever the fuck he does there. And on the way home to the real home with your hot wife, you have Her Majesty, your hot wife, go into extreme, integral detail, every single detail about the lovemaking experience. Have her explain it all. How the ball pulled her hair and left love marks on her neck and left bruises on her butt cheek, and how she begged that bull to inseminate her with his Chad sperm, and how she begged him to impregnate her because her cuck at home doesn't know how to treat her right in the bedroom. And just have her explain how this sex with the bull was so much better than it's ever been with you, you little cuck. And you just have her explain that all and just have it be so degrading and demeaning to you, because that's what you deserve. You're a cuck. You're not a bull. And hopefully, you know, you just do that night after night. And then, I don't know, when they're not at the hotel room, you go to the hotel room, clean the toilets, polish everything, and, you know, be the maid when you're not driving them around or having a Diet Coke with them, or when my lord and Her Majesty aren't getting fucked. Well, hope that helps. And thank you for being, oh, by the way, that cuck, he is a huge fan of Verbal Graffiti. Thank you very much for your viewership. All right, we're going to continue reading The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. This, we are now, what page are we on? Oh, we are on top of page 75. We will read two pages together aloud. Suddenly, her Revier was interrupted by a slight sharpness at her throat. Her eyes flew open, and she was shocked to see Carlsberg standing over her, his eyes glazing wildly, his sharp sword drawn and its point directly at her throat. She wanted to scream. He suddenly had gone mad. What was happening? "If you move," Carlsberg said in a strange, guttural voice, "I'll slice you to ribbons. Slice that beautiful white flesh of yours into little pieces." Pamela was staggered. But then in a flash, she realized that this was part of the fantasy. Carlsberg was a medieval soldier. Instinctively, she knew she must play her role completely. Who are you?" she stammered nervously, knowing if she moved, her life might be over with one stroke of the sword. Carlsberg laughed raucously. He was no longer the gentle, calm psychologist. He was a soldier now, from old England, cruel and barbaric. He played his part to perfection. "I am the chief commander of the army under Stirling," he snarled. "And you are to come with me as my bride. Would you like that, sweet maiden? Would you like to return to me, to my castle, and let me plunge my sword of flesh into your soft private parts? Would you?" Yes, she replied hastily, knowing she had no other choice. "Good, very good," he said in a low voice. He removed his sword from her throat and replaced it in the sheath. Then he unbuckled his ornate belt and let the sword and skirt of the straps fall to the floor, so that he stood there with his hips and thighs naked, save for the chain metal pouch that encased his sexual organs. He let his hand drop to the gleaming crotch and began to massage it slowly, and Pamela could see the enormous cock swelling beneath the pouch and pushing it outward. He bared his teeth and licked his lips crudely as he stroked himself openly, his legs spread wide, his lustful eyes leering at her costumed body. "First, I must test your obedience to the law of my commander," he said darkly. "You are to be my slave, my slave to do with as I please, a slave wife. It was quite an honor, my sweet, for such as you to be chosen by a leader in the army. You must show your pleasure now. Take off your sandals, slave. At his words, she immediately knelt up before him and unlaced his leather boots, unwinding them and removing each boot with great care. Now, kiss my feet, he snarled. Run your wet peasant tongue over my toes and my feet. Pay tribute to the greatness of your enemy. Go suck a fat one.